Bill Rogers, Regan Russell, William Sweet, Fernando Pereira, Bartolomé Moraes de Silva, Mike Hill, Tom Warby, Jill Phipps, Carol Van Nopen, David Gypsy Jane, Beth O'Brien, Robert Naya Bryan, Barry Horn. Those are the names of the activists featured in the Fallen Warrior section of the North American Animal Liberation Press Office website. In other words, those are activists who have paid the ultimate price, their life, for standing up to animal abuse and exploitation. My name is Ryan, you are listening to The Vegan Report, and in today's episode, I invited Dr. Jerry Vlasak, a press officer and longtime animal rights activist, to remember those heroes and reflect upon their sacrifice and legacy. We also remember those who have sacrificed their freedom for the animal cause, most notably Marius Mason and Maxim Plokhoi, who are still serving their sentence in prison. As I was telling you before we started the recording, I'm really glad to see you back on The Vegan Report. We recorded an episode about a year, more than that, I think, more than a year ago. And it was an amazing conversation. I will leave a link to that conversation in the episode notes and highly recommend people to go and listen to that past episode. But yeah, welcome back, Jerry.
Yeah, great to be back. Glad to be here.
Wonderful. So today I wanted to discuss with you the price that sometimes comes with doing activism for animals. And let me start the conversation with this question. How likely is it to pay that price, whether, you know, to be victimized for standing up for animals, whether we're talking about imprisonment or censorship, any of that? Let's talk about the spectrum of, you know, punishments out there reserved for activists, and also how likely it is to fall victim to that, to those forms of punishments.
Well, first of all, the vast majority of people who help animals don't have to worry about any sort of a penalty in regards to either being arrested or even worse, imprisoned for a significant amount of time. There have been, you know, obviously there are thousands and thousands of demonstrations and other kinds of nonviolent action going on all the time on behalf of animals. And it's very, very rare that anybody even gets arrested. And most of those people that get arrested are just basically processed and released within a few hours. And most of those times the charges are dropped and nothing ever happens. At any given moment, there's a very, very small number of people that are imprisoned for longer periods of time. I think at the current moment, there's only a couple of people that are in prison, and those are people that broke the law, purposely broke the law to help animals, which as the North American Animal Liberation Press Office, we advocate for that. We report on it. We tell you how to do it. We encourage you to do it because we personally think that breaking a system of unjust laws to help animals is a moral obligation for the most part. Not everyone can do it. Not everyone knows how or is in the position to do it. But we highly encourage it. And of the people that do that, and there are on average about 200 episodes every year that we know of where people break the law to help animals, and probably at least that many more that we don't know about because they never report it. So over the year, we've been reporting on this for more than 20 years. There have been thousands and thousands of actions where people have purposely broke the law to help animals. And I can almost count on both hands the number of times people have been arrested and spent any kind of time in prison for that. So it's very, very, very unlikely. Among the people that do get arrested, most of those people are people at demonstrations where things get kind of rowdy, or perhaps the police just decide to arrest people arbitrarily. And as I said before, most of those people spend a very, very short amount of time in the legal system, and most of them walk away with no charges at the end of the day. So all of that said, it's extremely unlikely, and it should really not be a major consideration when people are thinking about getting active and becoming an activist on behalf of animals. I think you also mentioned that there have been people that have paid the ultimate price, people who have been killed trying to help animals. And I find it kind of ironic because animal rights activists are portrayed in the media sometimes, and certainly by our opposition, as being these violent people who are out to hurt people in some form or fashion. Whereas in reality, no animal rights activist is very ser ever seriously harmed an animal abuser, even though some of them may deserve it. On the other hand, there have been a number of animal rights activists that have lost their lives, been killed by animal abusers. Most of the time, or not all, most of the time, but at least some of the times, these have been accidents. A couple of people have been run over by trucks carrying animals to slaughterhouses. Most recently was an activist in Canada, actually, that I'm sure you know about, Regan Russell, that was struck by a truck as she was offering water to pigs as they were being taken to slaughter. So there have been a few people that have paid the ultimate price. But again, over 20 years that we've been reporting, and at least another 20 years before that, where actions have been going on, there have been very, very few people that have had to pay that price. So overall, I think being an animal activist is a perfectly safe thing to do, as opposed to what happens if we don't become activists, and that is to sit idly by while billions of animals are tortured and killed in a system that legally says that's okay.
I would be remiss to have this conversation without mentioning what happened to Paul Watson in Denmark, how he was detained. And it reminded me of what you just mentioned, that irony of being punished and being the victim of some form of state violence because you are standing up for the lives of innocent creatures. And that's the case of Paul Watson. You know, who can blame him for having victimized anyone, for having, you know, taken the life of someone, for having committed some outrageous crime? Yet he was facing the potential of spending the rest of his life in prison, something like a capital sentence, in Japanese jails. What do you make of that severity that they displayed towards him? You know, that do you think they wanted to make him an example?
Yeah, that brings up a good point. Paul Watson, who's a friend of mine, by the way, was arrested and was threatened with a very long detention. And that goes to prove that the more effective you are, the harder they will come after you. So, as Andrew Lindsay, who's a theologian from the UK, said once at a conference that I attended, you only feel the chains when you begin to move. And I think when people are the more effective we are as activists, and I think Paul Watson is right near the top there on the effectiveness of that any activist could ever be. I think the more we threaten the profits of capitalists who make their living and their riches off of animal exploitation, the more we threaten that. In his case, mainly the people that were killing whales in the Antarctic Ocean. From Japan was that Japan issued an international arrest warrant for him and probably would have locked him up for the rest of his life if they were given the chance. He was an effective activist. He was exposing these atrocities to the world and making Japan look bad. So the more effective we are, the more likely they are to come after us, and the more likely they are to come after us with a heavy-handed fashion. So I think that's a good representation. But on the other hand, the choices to not be effective, to perhaps stand miles away from a place of animal abuse with a sign twice a week, and not have any real chance of helping those animals. I don't think they're likely to come after somebody that's doing that. But the more effective we are, and whether that's breaking the law to help animals, or like Paul Watson, obeying the law and still helping animals, the more effective you are, the more likely they are to come knocking at your door.
I think he puts it best when he says that he was about to be punished for kindness, basically. What do you make of the fact that this very, punishment, this detention, this bad thing that happened to him actually helped a lot his cause and was just this tremendous PR campaign for his foundation, for the good work that he's doing, and way to focus the world on this issue?
No, I think it's great that we can, take these unfortunate incidences and turn them around and use them in our favor. And so that's what was done in his case. I was once arrested for opposing the seal hunt in on the eastern coast of Canada. And when it came time to turn myself in to go to jail, I made sure that I turned myself in on the same day they started the hunt the next year, and therefore got a lot of publicity about that. And while I was in jail, I was on a hunger strike and got publicity for that. So we turn these incidences to our advantage whenever we can. And Paul's always been really good at that. Yeah.
You were detained and you were punished for your activism. Did the press office ever face any scrutiny from the authorities?
When we started the press office back in 2004, we were pretty sure that the authorities were going to come after us. They were going to think, well, they must know who those people are that are breaking the law, that they're reporting on these actions, and we're going to come and grab them and maybe lock them up, or maybe take their computers and see what we can find on their computers. We used to think that all the time. So we had all kind of measures in place to make sure that, the computers were backed up every single day and a whole bunch of different places, and that we used a lot of encryption and things like that. But it hasn't really happened. And I think ultimately the authorities know who we are and know that we're careful to not cross any lines, that we don't know who the people are that are breaking the law. We don't want to know who the people are that are breaking the law. So it hasn't been a real issue. I've had the authorities come to my home and ransack it one time in 20 years. And of course, they didn't find anything that was of any use to them at that time either. So far, we have not been. That might not mean that they're piling up a bunch of boxes in a room somewhere and they're getting ready to come after us any minute now. But I suspect that's not true. Like I said, I've been doing this for 20 years, and hasn't really been a problem. And I think that's the important thing to delineate between who we are as a press office, that we don't know who it is that the members of the Animal Liberation Front or other groups out there that are breaking the law to help animals. We don't know who they are. We don't know where they're located. There's no club you can join. People that want to join the Animal Liberation Front, just become the Animal Liberation Front. They go out there and they abide by a certain minimal set of guidelines, and they break the law in ways that help animals, whether it's chance to inflict economic sabotage against people who are profiting from animal abuse, or whether it's actually liberating animals from conditions where they're being abused, or occasionally even threatening people that are abusing animals when no other means will work to stop them from doing what they're doing. But again, that's not us. We report on these actions. We let people know about them. We let the mainstream media know why these things are happening. And we let other activists know why these things are happening. And we encourage other activists to do these types of things as well. We make no secret about that. I can't say that in the UK, for instance. I'd go to jail just for saying that I'm encouraging people to do this. I want people to break the law. I want people to help animals in whatever are the most effective ways possible. And I think breaking the law is frequently one of the most effective ways possible. It's not the only way, and I don't think it's the only way, nor should it be the only way, but it's one way of helping animals, and that's one thing that we just want to make sure everybody knows about.
You're right about the fact that you would not be able to have a press office in the UK, nor in Germany or even in France. Although you highlight actions, you know, done in those countries. So let's talk about this authority. Do you think there is a difference of aggression and antagonism with the animal cause, you know, in terms of countries? Do you think there are countries like Denmark who are much more antagonistic towards animal advocates than others?
Well, I think it's all about just following the money. And when you look at where people are making money off animal exploitation and animal abuse, that's where the government's going to stand up for them and protect that right of theirs to make money, because that's what capitalist societies are all about, is making as much money as possible and exploiting anybody or any animal or any human that you have to exploit to maximize your profits. So I don't know that Denmark is necessarily any worse than anybody else. I think they happened to grab Paul Watson on this international arrest warrant, and they ultimately made the right decision and decided not to turn him over. Historically, Denmark hasn't really been any worse than anybody else. I think places like the UK, where animal activism has been the most effective. As I mentioned before, the more effective you are, the more likely they are to crack down on you. I think there are a lot more laws in the UK about protecting animals and people having to follow a certain set of rules. For instance, there used to be a publication that was called the ALF Support Group, and they would have this publication. They'd mail it to people. They'd hand it out to people at events. Basically talking kind of like what we do about people that have broken the law and how other people can get active and how you could support them by donating money for their prison funds and things like that. And that was outlawed after right after I came into the movement back in the late 90s. It became illegal in the UK to promote illegal direct action in any form or fashion. So they do have a group there called Unoffensive Animal. I'd like to give a shout out to Unoffensive Animal. They do sort of like what we do. They report on animal activism and people who break the law to help animals. But they have to walk a much finer line than we do here. We have much more freedom of speech in the United States than they have there. Most other European countries are about the same. If you look at where people are most effective, it tends to be where the laws are the strongest. I don't know a whole lot about the laws in places like China and Japan. There's been historically a lot less reporting on illegal direct action in those countries. That doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means that it's not being reported on succinctly. And so we don't really know what's going on there. I'm not aware of anybody that's been imprisoned in China or Japan recently that for animal activism. Not to say that it's not there, but not that we know about.
We all know that famous saying from Gandhi, the quality of a society is can be assessed by how they treat animals. Well, I learned a lot about my country, Canada, and the US and other countries out there by how they treat ALF activists and animal advocates. It's really a way to test the strength of the democracies in those countries. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. Places like, even though the UK has cracked down more vociferously on people for breaking the law to help animals, they also have some of the best animal welfare laws in the world. I mean, they don't have veal crates in the UK. They don't allow circuses with animals. They have you know, some. There's still a lot of animal suffering going on in the UK, don't get me wrong, but they do have some of the most humane welfare acts, if you will, in the UK. So yeah, I mean, you have to kind of, you know, weigh that around. Whereas places like, you know, where in Korea, where until recently killing dogs for the meat trade was still a common occurrence. And again, not that killing dogs is any worse than killing cows or any other animals. It's just that we identify with dogs here in the United States and Canada more than than other animals. But yeah, I think, the different rules in different countries, but there's not really a country that's friendly to animals. I don't think we see a country where animals are afforded any sort of respect that they deserve anywhere, really.
And I should mention that the ban on the dog meat trade in South Korea will take into effect only in 2027, if I'm not mistaken. So it's still happening, but it won't happen in starting with the year 2027. Okay, so let's talk about the extreme of that spectrum of punishment, which is, death, ending up assassinated or murdered or losing your life for your activism. And you mentioned Regan Russell, the Canadian who was struck by truck and while protesting in a slaughterhouse or at the doors of a slaughterhouse. I guess, the first time I heard about Regan Russell, the first thing that shocked me was how the trucker did not get very was not really punished or get the full force of the law for what he had done. Were you surprised by that?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I think he ended up with a $2,000 fine or something, and certainly didn't go to jail. Despite the fact that he knew there were activists there, I'm not going to say he ran over her intentionally, but he was definitely negligent in his actions, which the court found. But again, the legal system is not going to punish people who are part of the machinery that allows animal agriculture and animal exploitation to go on. In other words, it would set a precedent that then people would exploit and try to stop more of this oppression in different ways. If they were to make, for instance, this guy go to jail for a long period of time, then all of a sudden the truck drivers would be a lot more cautious, and then we as activists could exploit that into keeping the trucks from rolling into these slaughterhouses. So I think the law, we have to remember that the law is there to protect the profits of the wealthy and those corporations that make money off the exploitation, not just of animals, but of humans as well. And I don't think we can expect in the reasonable future that any of that's going to change. I'm not surprised that he got off. I'm surprised he even got fined, to be honest.
What do you make of the activists in South America, in Brazil, who oppose the deforestation so, of the Amazon and are assassinated by ranchers, basically, or some hitmen hired by the ranchers? They're not really animal advocate, but what do you make of them?
Well, I mean, they're obviously exceedingly brave people. They know who they're up against, and they know the laws that will allow their retribution against them, and they do it anyway. And I think that's when you start talking about, real revolutionary ideas, when people know that they're facing the ultimate punishment and are willing to step up and do it anyway. In the struggle for animal liberation, we really haven't had to face that much. There's not many times when, as animal activists, we go into a situation knowing that there's a reasonably good chance that we could be killed or injured or So I, those people are a lot braver than we are, I think. I've always looked at, my activism. Anytime I might have spent in jail or in other uncomfortable situations, I've always just tried to compare that to what the animals are undergoing, and the animals have it so much worse that it doesn't. It does. It never deters me from doing what I want to do. I don't think it should. And again, we're not really facing the real threat. I mean, I'm not saying it's never happened, but it's not a very likely condition that one of us, even on the very front lines, you know, the people that are facing down the police at demonstrations, or the people liberating animals in the middle of the night from fur farms, or the people throwing rocks through the windows of animal exploiters. I mean, none of us are really facing the kind of retribution that these people are in places like Africa and South America, where they're literally putting their lives on the line every single day when they try to protect wild habitat or animals that are being poached and killed by poachers. You know, those in Africa that are trying to protect environments and animals there that are being poached for their horns, like rhinoceros and elephants and so forth. I mean, those people face death almost on a daily basis, and they're incredibly brave. And I think we should look up to them, and I think we should learn from them, and we should say, "Ha, look what they're doing." I mean, it's nothing what we're facing here. So why should we be afraid? We should go out there and do what needs to be done and not worry about it.
Exactly, and cases like Regan Russell are really rare, but I do still think, you know, it's important to remember those people and what happened to them. Only, you know, as a minimum for at least, you know, highlighting this horrific face of the exploitation of animal, of this industry of exploiting animals. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it's very important that we remember these activists. We have a on our website, on the prisoners page, if you scroll down to the bottom, there's a whole section on fallen warriors where we try to remember them. And I think every year, the anniversary of people like Jill Phipps, who also died under the tr wheels of a slaughter truck, people like Barry Horn, who died in prison on a hunger strike protesting continued animal exploitation. I think these people should remembered and should live on in our history, and that we should remember them when, if occasionally we face hardships and so forth in our campaigning for animals. If we can remember them, I think it can give us strength. I know it does me.
Yes, I feel the same way. I don't want to make them into martyrs or something like that, but it definitely is good, I think, to give meaning to you know their lives and highlight that, you know, they did not die in vain, that there is a in a way a purpose to it. Is there one of those fallen warriors who really made an impact on you, particularly so?
Well, each and every one of them is important to me in some respect. I think Jill Phipps, who was killed right around the time I was becoming active and spending some time in the UK, I was at some of the demonstrations that were very similar to the ones at where she was killed. So it rang a particular bell with me at that point. Yeah, Barry Horn, of course, was an inspiration to a lot of people. There have been hundreds of actions to help animals that have been dedicated to Barry Horn and the ultimate sacrifice that he paid. He was a member of the underground who was active for many, many years before eventually getting a long prison sentence, and went on a hunger strike trying to get the government to honor their promises to end certain animal exploitation laws. And when they reneged on those laws, he went on a hunger strike to try to force them to go on to obey their word, and eventually paid the price. And I think you just don't find anybody more dedicated than somebody like Barry. So he's been an inspiration to me as well, too. I know lots of other people as well, and their celebration, not celebrations, but there's acknowledgments every year on the anniversary of his death, as well as Jill's and Reagan's and others as well.
What should we be doing to acknowledge those debts, to remember those people? Yeah, what actions?
I think the best thing anybody can do to honor these fallen warriors and things that people have done is to get out there and help animals. And you can dedicate your actions to these warriors if you're so inclined. But I think I think if you could ask any of them what they would want people to be out there helping animals and doing whatever they can to help animals. And whether that's being a member of the Animal Liberation Front, or whether that's being a protester, or whether that's being someone who's working on legislation, whatever it takes, I think the best way to honor these people who made the ultimate sacrifice is, and what they would want, I believe, is that we're out there continuing the struggle. Yeah, that's the way I look at it.
Let's now talk about the prisoners and the people, and let's start with the people who are currently in jail. Who are those people and why did they end up in jail?
Here in the United States, the only person I'm aware of currently in prison for animal activism is Marius Mason. Marius Mason was a member of the underground helping animals, and got a very long prison term for some reason, even though people that were involved in the same organization as she was got much lighter terms. And he's believe that the original sentence was 21 years in prison. And they're looking at a release here in the next couple of years, so we're all excited about that. But yeah, Marius has had had a tough time as a transgender person in the legal system here in the United States. It hasn't been easy for him. But somebody that we should remember, try to write letters to, donate to their support fund if you can. Again, all this information is available on our website under the Prisoners tab. But yeah, Marius Mason is a hero to a lot of us. Interesting enough, in Ukraine, there's a guy named Maxim Bolkoi. I don't know if you heard about him, but he's a guy who took a busload of people hostage, and I use that term in quotation marks because he never really was going to hurt anybody, and I think he made that clear to everybody that was on the bus. But he actually got his president of Ukraine to recommend that everybody in the country watch Earthlings. And who knows, and the president did. The president went on television in Ukraine and asked everybody to watch Earthlings. And true to his word, he walked off the bus and got as you can imagine, got a pretty good prison term. We've been in touch with him. He has writings. He writes essays every once in a while, and we publish those. And again, there's ways you can support Maxim from our website as well. There was an activist in Sweden that's just recently been released. Sindre Persson was unjustly jailed after his animal rights activism, and has been released from the psychiatric forced care unit, where he was forced to go and imprisoned without really any justification and without any idea of how long he was going to be there. So yeah, that's pretty much that's most of the people that we know about that are currently incarcerated.
And can you repeat the part about what we can do to support them?
The thing that makes prisoners happy when they're in jail, and especially for any length of time, is to hear from the outside. Obviously, not discuss their case in particular, but tell them about just everything that's going on in the world, especially in relationship to animals and animal exploitation, and how animals are being helped by those that are still free out there. So, writing letters to prisoners is a really easy, inexpensive, and great way that you can support them while they're in jail. They love to hear from people. You can make pen pals, and I've written to them as myself. I think it's a great way to get to know them, and maybe even get to know them when they get out of prison. You can also, if you have a few extra dollars laying around, contribute to their funds, which is used to help out with expenses in prison, such as buying vegan food and other things to make their life a little bit more comfortable while they're in prison, as well as helping them get a foot on the ground when they come out of prison. So those are the ways that people can help, and it's like I said, it's easy to do, and it makes a big difference to people who have been in prison for helping animals.
And all of that is explained, you know, how to do it in the press office website.
Yes, again, that's animalliberationpressoffice.org. And there's a tab on the main page that take you to the prisoners, and it talks about how to write them letters, things you should say and shouldn't say. And also they all some of them they both, I believe, have support websites where you can go and learn more about their cases, and also contribute money if you'd like to.
I love the idea of, and there will be links in the description again for convenience. And I love the idea of writing to prisoners. I've been a longtime activist with Amnesty International, and that's their big thing, sending letters to prisoners who have defended human rights, not animal rights. In authoritative states, and it does make a difference. Yeah, it's a good thing. It's a very efficient tool of putting pressure on governments and breaking that solitude that they must feel in those prisons.
And I was just going to say, although I have never been incarcerated for a long period of time, I have talked to people after they've gotten out of prison that felt like, there is a lot of isolation there because you're basically surrounded by people or who are in prison for a lot of reasons, but usually it doesn't have anything to do with helping anybody, much less helping animals. And so I think there is a sense of isolation. It really, really helps to hear from people through letters and even phone calls. I've been in touch with prisoners on phone calls where they were actually allowed to call out and I was able to talk to them. But I think that helps alleviate some of that isolation and let them know that we have their back, that we'll make sure that they're taken care of. And I think, that in turn makes people on the outside more willing to engage in riskier behavior because they know that if they are caught, it's very unlikely that they will be, but in the very, very rare event that they are caught, they know that they'll have our support.
Yes, definitely. And what does it feel, and tell me from the discussions you had with them, to be in those prisons, like you said, surrounded by thieves and murderers and drug dealers, when all you've done is, speak up and do something to save lives. It must be, just crazy, a crazy feeling to be there in that place for.
Yeah, no doubt. I think prisons are way over-villainized in TV shows and so forth. I don't think prisons are as bad as everybody thinks they are. I don't think that, people are getting sexually abused every day and getting beaten up every day and stabbed every day. I mean, the people I've talked to that have spent a long time in year as in multiple years in prison have said that it's no fun being there, no doubt about it. Nobody wants to be there, but it's also a daily routine that you fall into, and you are looked at differently. I think the other prisoners look at you as like, what, he's here for helping animals? That doesn't make any sense. I think, and therefore, I think you are treated differently. And the people I've talked to that have spent time in prison haven't really come out thinking, oh, it's a it ruined my life or anything like that. In fact, historically, people that have come out of prison have been, motivated to stay active and maybe not risk going back to prison, but talk about it and talk to other people about how they can get active and do things. And so, I don't think we need to worry about it too much. I think you do what you have to do to get along while you're in prison, and then you get back out and get right back to work. I mean, certainly the activists in the UK, there were some activists that like Keith Mann, Mel Broughton, some others that would go to prison and they'd come back out and they'd get right back to work. They didn't even think about, retiring or doing something safer. They just went right back to work because, again, compared to what the animals are going through, nothing they do to us is can compare at all. And I think those of us that can keep the thought in our heads about what the animals are going through. I think that's what motivates us to keep doing what we're doing, even if there is some risk involved. And again, it's not a big risk, but some risk anyway.
Yes, I want to echo your point on prisons. That's why I use the word punishment for animal advocates, because for me, prisons are a tool of social reinsertion for people who, and that's my opinion is a bit out there, but who I don't think it's their fault that they're there. I think there is a that we should look at it from a determinism point of view. And those prisons should exist and should serve to help those people, be reinstated, give them the tools to socialize better. But for animal advocates, it's not necessary. They're not there because they don't care about people. They're there because they care about society. They care about people and they care about animals. Which is nonsense, and that's why, it is a form of punishment to put them there. It's not helping anyone. Who is scared of those vegan? If you do a poll with the general public who have never heard of veganism or the animal cause, I'm pretty sure that most of them would be outraged to realize that some people get imprisoned for that.
Yeah, I don't know about Canada, but certainly in the United States, there's just about zero effort in our prisons to help people reintegrate into society or to overcome any issues they might have with anger or drug use or anything else. It's simply a way of locking people up and making them miserable, and the recidivism rate is astronomically high, so that nobody's going to learn their lesson by going to prison, even if they were doing something that wasn't particularly useful to society. But yeah, and to your point, yes, people that are in prison for helping animals, the absurdity is just just terrible. But I also think that if we look at what the animals are doing, life without parole, every single one of them, and most of them are on death row. And they didn't do anything wrong. Okay. Like us, they didn't do anything wrong. They're just being imprisoned, tortured, and killed, executed because of who they are and because somebody can make a lot of money by doing it. And the prison industrial complex, again, at least in the United States, is also about making as much money as they possibly can off of prisoners. And so I don't expect things to change anytime soon in that regard. Luckily, like I've tried to reiterate several times here, that the chances of any of us going to prison for any length of period of time is very, very, very low. And indeed, the people that break laws to help animals are even less likely to go to prison or jail than the people like Paul Watson, who are standing up for animals publicly and doing things that threaten corporate profits. So I don't think we need to worry too much about going to prison if you're helping animals. Again, it happens so rarely and infrequently. We've been focusing on it today because that's the topic of the discussion. But I think in reality, anybody that wants to help animals, whether that means breaking the law or not, is very unlikely to face any sort of prison time.
Yes, and I think my audience is made of ethical vegan activists, so I think they understand the nuances of that, and they are receptive to that. They do get it. Yeah, and what about then the other forms of punishments from state, such as the violation of free speech rights? We mentioned the UK, and other minor things, that are not prison sentences, or even death sentences.
Not really my area of expertise, and I don't know that I can add a lot to that discussion. I think that again, the more effective we become, the more likely we are to suffer impingement on our rights in general. I also think, obviously, I don't think anybody has to knows what I'm not guessing what I'm talking about when I say that the political climate can also make a huge difference in people's right to free speech, with people being just scooped off the street and deported to other countries for their speech without any sort of due process of law whatsoever. So yeah, political winds can certainly blow a different direction and take away some of those rights that we're used to dealing with. Much as they did in the UK, the animal rights activists in the UK were so effective that a lot of their rights were taken away. And I certainly think that's something that could be coming down the pike here in the United States. And I don't know, there's maybe not as much in Canada, but yeah, again, I'm sorry I can't add a whole lot to that discussion, but.
Yes, I still had to ask. Okay, so all of those victims of imprisonment or all forms of oppression, persecution from governments did not stay quiet about their experiences. They did put them into writing. And in our last conversation, we talked about the book, The ALF Strikes Again, which, was such an amazing read for me. I recommend it. For me, it has become a dose of bravery. So whenever I need to, my daily or weekly dose of bravery or monthly, I just open that book and learn about the stories of the activist, including Paul Watson. I think he's in chapter 3 of the book. But yeah, so what other books have been written by activists from the ALF talking about their actions, but also their victimization?
Well, The ALF Strikes Back is a great book written by a former ALF activist and former federal prisoner, Peter Young. He's a very good writer, and he's done a lot since he's been out of prison talking about his experiences and motivating other people. So, yeah, that's a great book to read. He's also got a book called Liberation that's also available. All these available on Amazon, by the way, or our website at animalliberationpressoffice.org. One of my personal favorites is a fairly small book written by another former ALF activist, Rod Coronado, who was active in liberating animals from fur farms back in the late 90s, and then ended up spending a few years in prison. But he wrote a book. Actually, it was a series of essays, which were compiled into a small book called Flaming Arrows. And it's a very inspiring book, and one that I reread every once in a while, because it was inspiring to me when I was a younger activist, and it still brings inspiration. So yeah, those are three really good books for anybody that wants to get inspired. And I can't, at least if it anything like how it affected me, you won't be the same person after you read them.
And I think he was also featured in the ALF Strikes Back.
Rod's sort of the OG of the animal liberation front in the United States. He was a real inspiration to a lot of people, and is still active. In fact, he's still working on protection of wild wolves up in the New England area. And I've heard from him quite recently, so he's still out there all these years later. So there's so few people that not only people that have spent time in prison, but just people that have been active, like Paul Watson, for their entire lives, for decades. And it's inspiring to see these people that are still out there, including Peter and Rod and Paul and so many others. It's great.
And I would love to get him on the show and have a discussion with him after reading his book, of course. Jerry, this, was a wonderful conversation. I hope people, like you said, do not feel frightened to do activism work because of the imprisonment risk or other risks. Like you said many times, it's minimal. And there's a silver lining to all of those bad things. And this movement has this magical ability to take some of the worst situations and turn them into strengths, which is always a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't also mention a couple of people that are out on bail that are actually aren't prisoners. But Kara and Celeste are a couple of activists in the New England area that were recently arrested and charged with trying to liberate animals. And obviously, nobody has any idea whether they're guilty or not. They're in the early stages of the legal proceedings. But anybody that wants to support them, that's Kara and Celeste. They're trying to raise funds for legal defense at this point. And again, on our website, if you want to go there, and there's all the information on how you can help them out if you want to. And they're not in prison right now, but they are out on bail and are looking forward to legal proceedings in the future.
I would be happy to help them. Thank you, Jerry. And let's show solidarity to, in this movement. So yeah, that's it for me. Jerry, did you want to add something before we stop the recording?
No, I think it's important just to let you know and let your viewers know that there's almost no downside compared to what the animals are going through. There's almost no downside to what we go through in trying to help them. And so whatever it is that is your passion and your calling, be brave and get out there and do whatever needs to be done that you're good at doing. And don't worry if the police come calling, it's only because you're being so effective. And it's not likely that you're going to spend any time in jail. But if you ever do find yourself there, very unlikely. But if you ever do, you know that there's plenty of us out there that got your back.
Exactly. Plenty of people that will think about you, including Jerry, including the press office, including me. And yes. So thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you for having taken the time to answer my questions. And remember those people, those fallen warriors.
It's been great to be here. I'll see you next time.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.